Entrepreneurship is great, but can also seem overwhelming. Wouldn't you like to know the pros, opportunities, and problems with different business and investment strategies before you jump in? Well then, welcome to Entrepreneurship Exposed. All right. Welcome to another episode of Entrepreneurship Exposed with your guy Bees, business builder Bees, or business buyer Bees that people call me nowadays. Yeah. But it's fitting that we have today's guest is a special guest. I mean, all of my guests are special, but I really am happy to have this guest here because this is a different conversation. This is just two buddies talking, and we're in the same industry that most people in our community are not talking about, right? So welcome to this episode of Entrepreneurship Exposed, where we are going to expose the private equity market, where you should be getting your piece of the $68 trillion wealth transfer. So without further ado, welcome to our guest today, Ace Chapman. What's good, brother? How's everything?
What is up, man? It's good to see you. I'm excited just for us to be able to chat again. It's been maybe a month since we got to hang out in Miami. I'm excited just to chat, man.
For real, man. I'm excited that you're here, bro, because this conversation, every time it's funny, I have this conversation with people about buying businesses, and I tell them, you know, I show them how I do it, and then they end up saying things like, oh, well, you're a genius, Bees. I'm like, no, I'm not a genius. I didn't really make this up or anything. This is things that everyone has been doing, right? It's just not been in our community. There's nothing new here, right? So I think everyone needs to be doing it. And in business acquisition, there's multiple lanes, multiple strategies that you can take. And then specifically today, we're going to talk about the private equity side of it. So tell the people a little bit more about what you do, who you are first, and then we'll dive right in.
Yeah, so I got introduced to this world by happenstance when I was 19. I was the user of a website called Cool Wall Street. And as a member, I was just frustrated with the company because the site was always crashing, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so my journey into business acquiring started when I reached out to them to intern for their company my sophomore summer. So I reached out to them. It wasn't a surprise. They did not contact me. And then I reached out again. Eventually, they're like, hey, we're actually trying to sell this business. That's why we're not paying attention to it. If you know anybody who wants to buy it, you could just, you know, tell them about it. And maybe you could, you know, go and intern for them. I'm like, okay, like that's random. But yeah, I was curious about the business. You know, internet was fairly new. This is 1999. And so different business models were just being started and tried on the internet. And so this was a stock market simulator during that time. So I'm like, I'm just curious, like how much money are they making? How much do they want to sell it for? So even though I was just 19, they somehow thought that I could find them a buyer for this business and sent me all the financial information, everything over. So I'm looking at this stuff. I'm like, okay, they want $70,000 for the business and they are making a profit of $60,000 a year. And I knew nothing about business valuations, but I felt like, hey, if I can get all my money back in a little more than a year, this just seems like a great deal. And then combined with that, the college I was at, people were paying $35,000 a year at that point and getting out to make $40,000. So that's a, you know, $140,000 in exchange for $40,000, you know, income. So I was just trying to figure out how I could buy this business. And that led me down this road of trying to research that back then, literally Google didn't even exist. So, you know, it's like trying to just figure out, okay, how does this whole world work of business buying? And that became my first quote unquote leverage buyout where I had $3,000. I'd say we're actually talking about the summer job that I had working at this camp. I'd saved $3,000 and which was a long way from the 70. But I used credit cards, was able to get a wealthy friend to put in 15 and then some owner financing. And so that was my first deal. But it still wasn't a paradigm shift. And, you know, Bees and I were talking before until that first month hit and money was just in my account. And for a sec, I was like, hey, why is there, you know, you check your balance, like, why is my balance this high? You know what I mean? And so I got that first monthly nut. And, you know, for a high school kid, you're getting $5,000 in a month. You know, it's up. You used to try to stretch $5 over the course of a week. That was my realization. I was just like, I was almost hurt. I was like, why has nobody ever told me that this was an option? That instead of me trying to go out and work and create an income or try to start a business and create an income, the same way I could go and buy a car, buy a house, I could just go buy that income.
I love that. And so there's a key thing that you said in there that I want to call out, because you said LBO. Well, you said leverage buyout, right? LBO. And I tell people that this industry, the same thing that you could do for what was the valuation on that business?
$70,000.
Same thing you could do for a $70,000 business to buy is the same thing you could do for a $70 billion business to buy. And Elon Musk is a perfect example of that, how he just bought out Twitter. And that was not his own money, because he used the revenue of the business to pay for the acquisition. So I love that you mentioned that, because when people hear those things, LBOs, they're like, oh, that's above me. That's not something that I can deal with, right? So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Now here's the thing, though. I actually think, and you tell me what you think about this, I actually think that to buy $70,000 business might be harder than buying a $1 billion business. Why is that? Because a $70,000 business, sometimes they're going to be like, hey, I need $70,000 cash. They just want that. Whereas a $1 billion business, you don't know where you're going to get the money. You don't have the money, whatever. But the mechanics of it works. It's already common that they know that they end up doing that LBO model. All right. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. So I think the financing. So the financing is easier on this, on the $1 billion business. So what, like, you have the situation where, you know, on a $1 billion deal, there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of interest in people who want to invest, because that's a secure investment. If something's grown to $1 billion, there's some security in it. You know, it's not going to just disappear. So you have people that are willing to put in debt financing. You have people that are willing to put in equity financing. And so the financing becomes, obviously, all the books and all that stuff is in perfect order. You know, you just have all those things that makes it a lot easier. The downside is the multiple. So because it's so easy to get the financing for a deal like that, you're going to buy it at this super high multiple. That's one of the interesting things, even with Elon's deal. It's like, at the end of the day, you're paying, you know, 30x of what the business is actually generating. And in that world, that does work. So if you look at, like, the comparison of paying 30x, so let's say, that means it's going to take you 30 years for you to get all your money back if you don't do something explosive in the business.
Yeah.
On the other end, it's tougher to get the financing, which is one of the reasons that the multiple is so low. But it means that even if you do pay cash, you know, an average deal that isn't a good deal may be a 3x. So you're going to get all your money back in 3 years, or in the case of my deal, you find a special opportunity and you're buying it at a 1x. So whereas with that $1 billion deal, it's going to take you 30 years to get all your money back. In the smaller deal, you may find an opportunity. And the reason that exists is because there's not an efficiency in the market. When a $1 billion business goes on the market, everybody knows, you know, the reason there was no other bidders for Twitter is because it's really just a bad business. You know what I mean? If it's a great business, you're going to have all these people that are bidding that price up. In these deals, you get to talk to that person. And most of my deals, I'm literally the only bidder. So, you know, that is pros and cons, though. But yeah, you're exactly right. Getting the financing that's going to be a lot easier.
So I'll say this, though. I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to challenge you a little bit, right? I agree that Twitter is a bad business deal in terms of the financials, the numbers, the whatnot. But the reason I say it's one of the best acquisitions is because it's media. And media is powerful, right? Yeah. I tell people all the time that Disney is not, you know, as powerful as it is now because of the parks and stuff. It's because of the, he focused on acquiring media, you know, ABC, ESPN, all these different things. And then that Marvel, you know what I mean? All of those things that made it into extra $1 billion revenue streams within the overall conglomerate. So I think media is the, you know, there's times where you're going to have exceptions of, hey, this is not the best deal, but there's other things that I could do with this deal. Like I bought something that was a small acquisition and I knew I wasn't going to make money in the business anymore, but I wanted their contact list. So their contact list was media for me. And I used that for something else. Right. So I like to show people that it's not just a, hey, here's exactly what you do step by step, this, this and that. It's really creative deal making. It's creative. You know, you get to make these awesome off the wall decisions on certain things, on what to acquire. Like I would have never thought about acquiring a med spa, but now I'm doing that. I would have never thought about, I wouldn't even have thought really about a laundromat, but I'm looking at a commercial laundromat right now. That's $10 million deal. Right. So there's a lot of things that you just come to that you're like, wow, this is unexpected, but really refreshing. Right. You get to.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I love about this space is it's just like the stock market. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you have hedge funds that have one strategy. You have people that only want to be on the short side of the market that are bears. You have people that only invest for the long term and, you know, they're long term bullish. You have people that focus on bonds. So it's just all of these things that are with these strategies that are with in the market. It's the same thing with this space, which is what makes it a lot of fun and really dynamic, is that at the end of the day, you can have somebody like, I love what Iger did with Disney and that example of buying media and then also getting licensing to the intellectual property like Marvel to combine with that meat. Like, it's just like brilliant. And so so the really neat thing is you can have somebody who's like, hey, I want to buy a business that has some potential to grow. I, over the years, have gone into more of what probably in the 80s would have been called more vulture types of deals, where I'm not interested. You know, if people are familiar with maybe like Carl Icahn or that kind of thing. Like, I'm not as interested in potential, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it gets more into the entrepreneurial lane of, I want to try to turn this into something. So I agree. I think that for Elon, Twitter is an amazing deal. And long term, it's, you know, it's just, I think he's gonna kill it. For somebody with my investment philosophy, it would pain me to pay somebody for potential. So I don't want to pay you unless you've achieved the potential. Then, like, okay, great, I'm going to pay you. But I look at a deal like that, and I have people that try to do that in the smaller space, you know, where we do deals that are mostly in the below 10 million and below. You know, they want to do the same thing where it's like, oh, but there's this potential, and we got all of this, and we have all of these, and it's like, yeah, but I'm not paying you for the potential. Let's look at, what do you have right now? How much money are you making right now? And I think that's it's not that the hedge fund or the value fund, that they're, one is wrong and one is right. It's just a difference in investment philosophy, I guess you could say.
Well said. Well said. I agree with that too. Don't pay for potential. I look at, when somebody, I'm looking at a business to buy and I'm selling it for $10 million. I always say, oh, okay, how did you come to that valuation? What method did you use to achieve that valuation?
And after having $10 million.
Exactly. You know? And half the time they have no clue on it. And then when I say, okay, well, what I do is I base valuation off of EBITDA. And I explain how I find the multiples for the industry, et cetera. And often they'll say exactly what you just said. Like, oh, yeah, but... Once I hear that word, but, like, there's no but. There's something called fair market value, right? If I go to buy a car and I check the Kelley Blue Book and it says $10,000 for it, and you tell me, yeah, but it is worth $20,000. I'm like, no, Kelley Blue Book says this. And you want to go to another site? Oh, this other site says $500 more. Okay, I'll give you $500 more, but I'm not going above fair market value, right? So I think that's an important concept to consider in this whole industry of acquisition and private equity. Now, before we continue, I got, you know, my listeners like the real, right? And that's what sets this show apart. It's the real. And they see a lot of glitz and glamour online. Hey, yeah, I'm driving a Lamborghini. I'm making all this money and this and that. But I want them to understand the real aspects of it. So we're going to do a little segment called Pop, right? And in pop, we're going to expose the pros for sure, right? The pros of private equity. But then we also want to look at the opportunities in the space right now. And then lastly, most importantly, is the problems. So the pros, the opportunities, and the problems. So let me know, let the audience know what you think is one of the pros, which I think is the easiest part, but the pros of being in private equity and business acquisition overall.
Yeah, I think it's just the timing. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and it's been interesting to see more and more interest over the course of those 20 years in private equity. So to give people a little bit of history, in the 80s, you know, there were these things called corporate raiders. And the corporate raiders would go into a business. They try to make things more efficient, streamline things, increase profits, et cetera. It got a bad name over the course of the 80s. And so they basically did a rebrand and turned it into private equity. And so it's the idea of buying these private companies, but doing the same thing, going in, trying to increase the profit and generate a higher return. And over time, it was a unique concept, but over time, pension funds and all these funds started to realize like, hey, as we can see in the public markets, there are pros and cons to the public market. And that's a great definition that's up here right now. So this private equity gives us some exposure to something where, you know, the Fed doesn't raise the rate as much as people thought, or they raise it too much. And all of a sudden people are losing, you know, millions of dollars. In this private market, we don't have that issue or that problem. And so as history has kind of gotten more time to prove itself within that industry, people can look back and see, oh yeah, like here is this other asset class that we need more exposure to. And you know, the space that I'm in is considered micro private equity because we're doing deals under 10 million, but we're able to generate a higher return. And so now that there aren't as many deals in the private equity world and they're super expensive, there's more of that money that's coming down. And so what's happening right now that's the major pro is the economic circumstances that's requiring people to get access and to start investing in more private equity deals and more private equity funds. You know, inflation is very, very high. People have to invest their money. Like that's the first thing. So you're in a situation where people no longer have the option of sitting in cash. So especially if you're a millionaire, if you've got $100 million in the bank, we're basically at 9% inflation this year, you're guaranteed to lose $9 million if you just leave that in the bank. So that's $9 million gone. You don't get something done next year, another $9 million gone. So Fed's trying to get that under control, but right now people have to get that money to work. Secondly, there's more money than ever that's sloshing around because they've literally just pushed trillions into the marketplace. So you have more money than ever and it has to be invested. And the stock market we're going to be in these volatile times for probably the next 10 years. And so people are looking for something a little more stable. And so they're rushing to private equity funds. And, you know, as Bees knows, like we have funds and, you know, we spend more time telling people, no, they can't invest right now than raising capital. And so you have people that are searching for this yield to be able to beat inflation. And then kind of the final piece, which ties into the title for today, is that in addition to that, you've got $68 trillion that baby boomers are passing down to their kids. And that $68 trillion, some of those, about $12 trillion, that is the businesses themselves. And I'll talk, you know, kind of when we get to the ops about one of the unique opportunities there. But $12 trillion of that is just straight small businesses in the range that I'm talking about. So those are getting passed down or transferred and need to be sold. A lot of the kids don't want those. But then in addition, you've got cash and stocks and all that. And so that creates this opportunity. And those people want to diversify into some of these other areas and, you know, up and coming and that kind of thing. So that's the biggest opportunity. And so, you know, one of the reasons that I started the private equity fund incubator was just that. How can we get more of these funds started and more importantly, train more managers to take advantage of this huge wealth transfer.
I love that. I love that because that's another thing that I tell people all the time is that there's 50 million baby boomers in this country, of which about 12 million have businesses, and all baby boomers are retiring this decade. So yeah, there's a huge wealth transfer. Even if you're going my route, which is acquiring the businesses, then that money that the baby boomer gets to help with their retirement also gets transferred down to the next generation, to their kids and such. So you're right. There's so much opportunity. So you pretty much gave the pros and the opportunities of this industry for sure. What would you say are the problems to look out for?
I will say the specific opportunities so that people.
Sure.
So the specific opportunities, because that was kind of just like, oh, here's this, all this money, but what do I do? So, you know, the opportunity number one is becoming a fund manager. And I think that's one of the things that does intimidate. You know, I think, first of all, people are intimidated by thinking about buying a business, which, you know, is no difference than buying a car or a house. It's just a different set of documentation and process.
Yeah.
But at the end, you've got a loan, you've got an asset, you got to pay that. But this asset, unlike the car, is actually going to pay you money. With becoming a fund manager, it's basically just a series of steps. And, you know, the reason that it's so kind of obscure to most folks is that Wall Street doesn't want you to know how to do that, how to play that game. And one of the things that we've talked about is the fact that for fund managers, it's kind of leapfrogging this process to wealth, where you don't have to save up your wealth to make money off of it. You can literally just go raise the wealth to make money off of it. So that's the number one opportunity. And you know, we've created managers from scratch that have never done it, so it can be done. And then the second thing is business brokering. So, you know, we have a brokers called Cook Merger. And so there's this concept of basically being a merger specialist, where you're helping a business either prepare and exit at a maximum value, or finding other businesses that they can acquire to grow and merge together and eventually exit. And so in that brokerage, you know, we basically train people, we help them become brokers, because again, a part of that 12 trillion, a part of all of these businesses that are selling, is a lot of them don't know how to sell. They don't know how to get maximum value. I can't tell you the number of businesses. I bought a spa one time, and this was years ago, but I bought the spa. I always introduce myself to everybody, the neighbors, the other businesses around. And so, you know, I introduced myself to this shop next door, and we got a lot of business from them. So they always had people coming in and out. So I pull up to the business just to check on it one day, and I see a store closing sign. I'm like, why is their store closed? Like, they're super busy. Like, why is this store closing? So I go in, I find the owner. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Y'all are closing the store? And I'm not there all the time. So, you know, I was going to that business maybe once a month. So it had been a few weeks since I was actually on location. And so I go and talk, and like, at this point, everything's kind of sold, it's rock bottom and blah, blah, blah. And I ask her, like, what's going on? Like, why are you closing? Is everything okay? And she's like, yeah, everything's great. I thought maybe she was health scare or whatever. And it's like, no, things are perfect. I'm just ready to retire. And I'm like, okay, but why are you closing? And she was like, why wouldn't I close? Like, that's what I'm going to do. It's like, I want to retire. I don't want to work anymore. And I'm like, but why didn't you sell the business? And she was like, who would want to buy it? It's like, you're literally talking to somebody that you know bought the business next door. Yes, hey, I'm the new owner. I bought this business from Denise, who had owned the business. And, da, 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 da. And she's like, oh, would you have bought it? I'm like, yeah, now you've ruined it, but I would have bought it. You never even gave me the opportunity. And so that's where a lot of baby boomers are. They've saved up enough money. You know, if I would have got that business, she was willing to just let it go. So I could have just got it. So, you know, they've saved up money for retirement, blah, blah, blah. They just don't know that they can sell. And so that becomes this huge opportunity. A lot of what we're doing with Good Merger is just educating these business owners on how to sell. So those are the two specific big opportunities in that 68 trillion. So let's talk about the cons. One of the biggest cons is just psychological barrier. And it's not that it's a psychological barrier that doesn't make sense. Like, I totally get it. You know, if you're somebody who grew up and, you know, let's say you grew up in the projects and you literally knew no one who ever bought a house, that would be a daunting task. I mean, we take it for granted, but even just growing up and having an uncle who bought a house, or having somebody else who your parents bought a house, you just hear things being talked about. So they're talking about, oh, we got to get an appraisal. So yeah, like, oh, what's an appraisal? Like, oh, when you're buying the business, when you're buying the house, they go and they come and they tell you what the value is, da, 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 da. It's like, oh, we got to get a mortgage. Oh, how does that work? Oh, you go to the bank, you got to fill out this application. They're going to want your pay stubs and their tax returns possibly. And, you know, they're going to do this. It's like, oh, okay. I think we're going to close today. We got the money's in escrow and we're going to the title company. Oh, what's escrow? What's it? You know, all of these things. And so that becomes normal. But if you've never heard any of that before, it becomes this daunting thing. You're like, what? There's titles and there's closing companies and I got to get a mortgage and I got to get an appraisal and there's an inspection. It just seems like it's overwhelming until it becomes this thing of being around folks that are doing it and talking about it and that kind of thing. And that's why I'm really, you know, like excited for your community of business buyers. It's just like getting around folks that are talking about this, it becomes a simple thing. You know, just like I mentioned with funds, getting around people that are I was just at a conference about funds, you know, getting around people that are talking about that is important. Even for me at this point, you know, I was at another conference right after that was in financing businesses. I want to get on the bank side. So I want to, you know, see what these banks are talking about when it comes to financing deals. So with the cons, I think that is it's a real obstacle to get over. Is getting into this world, getting around other people that are talking that language. So the same way that it becomes second nature, like, oh yeah, like, of course, like I understand how to buy a house. Like that's not some ridiculous thing. you know, it becomes the same way with these deals. And then you just get to the point, like, you know, talking to one of partners and, you know, he had a month where he closed four businesses in a month. And even I was like, dude, like what? So, you know, that just becomes like, hey, okay, this is second nature.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, man. I mean, I mentioned to people what I'm doing, and sometimes they'll say things like, oh, you're a genius, right? Oh, that's amazing. I'm like, that what? This is not, I didn't make this up. I didn't create this myself. This is common. Yeah. It already exists in the industry. People have been doing it for decades, you know, for centuries in terms of buying a business, right? Yeah. So that mental barrier that people have is definitely something that we want to figure out how to overcome. But that's why we have things like the Business Builders Institute with my community, the BBI, you know, because now you're going to see other people doing it. Right? Just like you said, it's going to be extra motivational, right? And at the very least, I'm very transparent with what I buy. So we actually use some of my acquisitions as case studies. So we're like, okay, well, now you're seeing exactly how I think about it, how I structured the deal so that you feel more comfortable overall. All right. So, yep. So I love the, I think it's a great pop for us to sum up the private equity space. Now, what would you say, like, what's next for you in private equity overall?
Yeah. So, you know, the thing that I'm most excited about right now is, you know, kind of pulling together all of the tools. You know, what I've realized over the years is the, you know, financing on a lot of these acquisitions is difficult. So, you know, we've acquired a couple businesses that are in that space, which is one of the reasons I was at that finance conference. But we've acquired a couple businesses in that space so that, you know, we can have a little bit more control over financing the deal. You know, with the private equity funds, you know, we're now getting to the point, you know, I'm really excited. We're going to be partnering on creating a fund together with your community. And, you know, when you're putting these funds together, it's now at a point where the funds can start to do cool things. You know, we're on our seventh. And so those funds can start to joint venture on deals, can start to buy and sell deals between each other, can start to participate at different levels in the capital structure, so that, you know, one deal they may say, okay, I want to participate in the debt, or, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to participate at the equity level. So because a big part of what makes private equity work is that you have all these funds and nobody's going to just doing something by themselves. Even Elon, you know, he's the name, but there are a lot of different funds and investment banks, you know, which is kind of like brokers that are behind, that are putting putting that deal together, you know, and all these things. It's not this thing where somebody just goes out and does by itself. So that allows us to do more deals, do bigger deals, participate in different ways. So that's what I'm excited about in that front. And then that final piece on, you know, helping these small businesses, which is probably what I'm at this point out of the three most passionate about, is just like that lady that I gave in that story. There are a lot of small business owners, and just like your story, where we're able at this point to look at a business and say, hey, this database is valuable. Well, this just takes it a step further to be able to say, okay, actually, it's not valuable to me, but because I understand this private equity thinking, I know who is valuable too.
Yes.
So we can go over there and do a deal. And so that's the thing I'm most excited about is, you know, and even in, especially in Black community, like if we don't pass a business down, we shut the business down. And that's wealth that's disappearing from our community. So helping people to understand the importance of preparing for the exit, understand the valuations, and then actually helping them find the buyer with our good merger business brokers business. I am very excited about that.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but I got to ask it for the audience, right? What is your favorite industry or type of business to acquire?
For me, it changes. So it's always based on what's in the portfolio. You know, so like whenever we do a fund, the first thing is just, I want to find the very best deal. So, you know, it's just, we go out, what's the highest ROI? Because within a fund, like that's what it comes down to. What's going to generate the very best ROI for the fund? And, you know, we have some high benchmarks. I mean, our PEFI one set it out, you know, their fund had about a 300% annualized return. So once I realized we could do that, it's like, hey, I mean, we're only doing triple digit annual returns in this game. But the idea is that we're really agnostic. So we go in, we want to just find the very best, highest ROI deal and lowest investment. Because if you're getting in and you don't have any money, that return is an infinite return. And then based on that, we go and we look for the complementary deals to kind of add fuel to the fire of the ROI of that first deal.
Nice, nice. So yeah, it's about the numbers. It's about the deal itself, not specifically the industry overall. I love it. So as we wrap it up, the next concept, and I have to ask everybody this that comes on the show, the concept of the $1 trillion table. Right. So you already know, you and I have spoken about it before, but I want to create this $1 trillion table of assets under management, right? Preferably with people that look like us that are in this table, on this table, in this room, right? That we could come together and say that, yes, we have $1 trillion assets under management by the end of this decade. Do you want to be at this table? And what do you think about it?
Absolutely. I love it. I think we're contributing to it with these funds, giving people this gain. You know, it's more than just, hey, come through this program and let's do a fund together. It's now you have somebody that over the course of that decade has that skill set to go out and have their own assets under management. So absolutely. You know, that's a big part of my mission as well. So excited to be a part of it.
There we go. There we go. I look forward to seeing you at that table. My brother, I appreciate you being on here today. I appreciate you always, man. I love what you're doing. I love the information that you give. I love that you're an inspiration to our community and so many others. And more people need to hear what you're talking about, what we talk about, so that, you know, we can help our people, our community, and most importantly, the next generation to have that head start in true wealth creation. I wish I knew this information when I was like 17. You said you got it at like 19. That's when you started.
But I was feeling my way through the dark starting.
Well, now our listeners don't have to feel their way through the dark because you have things. You have people like Ace Chapman. You have myself, Bees, and the Business Builders Institute, a whole community of people who are acquiring businesses. All right. So Ace, thank you, brother, for joining us on Entrepreneurship Exposed. As always, it was a great conversation, and I look forward to the next one. Any last words for our listeners?
No, I appreciate you having me, and let's get to work, man. We got a lot of work to do if we're going to hit that decade goal.
Yes, sir. Let's get it. Let's get it. All right, everybody. Catch you later.